Have you heard of the Plot Manuscript? It's 330 pages, an overview of the entire Bible. People who have read it have said it's helped them understand and enjoy the Word of God. Hi, this is Bob Enyart. I wrote The Plot years ago. We sell it at a money-back guarantee, $49.95 plus shipping and handling. And if you don't feel that you really understand the Bible now, we want to give you your money back. So go online to order it at kgov.com, or call us at 800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I'm Bob Enyart. Welcome to Real Science Radio.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Fred, we're going through Ken Ham's magazine, Answers, the January through March 2013 issue. As we do each of the stories, let's tie it into our fabulous science DVDs and books that we have available in our store, because this is our telethon month.
This is telethon month.
Yes. So our goal is to raise $25,000 to keep our internet operation going for another year. I mean, we have half a dozen people here normally, Monday through Friday, at our Real Science Radio studio.
And to keep us on the air at KLTT.
Yeah, that's right. Most powerful Christian radio station in the country. Fred, let's begin with a really fun article on galaxies. And it turns out that astronomers have discovered a very amazing galaxy, and they're bragging about it.
Yeah, it's huge. They call it Supermom.
Supermom.
They claim it creates 700 stars each year. Wow, that's amazing, Bob. I wonder how they know that.
Well, yeah, it is, because if we see stars being born, then that's sort of evidence for the Big Bang model. But astronomer Danny Faulkner, who is this really neat astronomer who's a friend of Real Science Radio, he's been in the chair you're sitting in right now in studio. Danny Faulkner explains what they're really looking at. Now, this galaxy they're talking about is 5 billion light years away.
So they can't observe the stars from that far away, can they?
They can't even see a star, let alone
see one form.
Right. Seeing a star being born, it's like if you can't see the cows, they're too far away, you're not going to be able to see a cow being born.
Yeah.
And so, sure enough, Danny says, look, they're not seeing stars being formed. What they're seeing is a galaxy with an unusually bright X-ray glow. That's what they're seeing.
They're seeing a glow, and so they deduce from that that
stars are forming. Being
born.
Of course they
the
would,
The big
right?
glow theory.
Right, and so
if you see something glowing, it must be creating something. Is
right.
that the theory?
Yeah, and it's like with Darwinism. Every time they find something new, they say, oh,
well,
we now
evolution.
Found the missing link. Every time. And so it turns out that I have a quote on one of our Real Science Radio shows from a while back, from the editor of the journal Nature.
Yeah, it's a big journal. That's probably the most popular science journal in the world.
Yeah. And John Maddox was the editor for 23 years, and he wrote about the Big Bang and stars forming and galaxies. And what he wrote, and this is in a book, when he stepped down from Nature, and he wrote a book called What Remains to Be Discovered. And he said, what came first, stars or galaxies? We have no idea.
He said, we have no idea. And yet they really sell the Big Bang as something well proven, right?
Yeah, like the public, they want the public to have this high confidence level that they figured it all out. They haven't even figured the moon out. They haven't figured our sun out. And if you don't know what came first, stars or galaxies, you haven't figured it out.
Yeah, so they make stuff up. They see a glow and and somehow they come up with 700 stars being created a year.
Every year, right. In our galaxy, which is a lot closer to us, obviously we're in the Milky Way galaxy, they say a couple stars form per year. They haven't seen those either. So this is a great time to tell the audience about our astronomy DVDs. At Real Science Radio, we have a great science store online, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store, and there are two fabulous DVDs, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, Volume 1 and Volume 2. These are by a dear friend of Real Science Radio, Spike Pisaris. And Spike has created simply the greatest astronomy DVDs ever produced. And we have gone through probably hundreds of science DVDs and books, and we recommend only the very best at our store at realscienceradio.com. Click on the store, and you'll love these astronomy DVDs, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, Volume 1 and Volume 2. You got to get them.
Yeah, those are awesome, Bob. I've seen them both, and they're fabulous. Highly recommend them.
All right, so Fred, what do we do next?
Well, what about the big Hollywood movie coming out about the art? It's going to star Russell Crowe.
He's a superstar,
right? He is a superstar. He was the Gladiator in a whole bunch of other roles. So, yeah, and they're spending, what, $130 million on the production of this movie.
So this
is going to be a big blockbuster, and yeah. I bet you it's going to be real popular. Hopefully they'll keep it rated G or PG.
Yeah, the producers are insisting that they're treating the biblical text with respect. Now, who knows, right?
Yeah, who knows? We'll see.
If they do stay true to the story of the Bible, it's like Moses and the movie The Ten Commandments, Cecil B. DeMille, mm-hmm. and all that. These movies make so much money when they stay true to the text, like The Passion of
the
Christ.
Absolutely, that's right.
That was a low-budget to medium-budget movie.
It wasn't a big-budget movie.
No, like $35 million, and it took in about $1 billion worldwide.
That's a pretty good rate of return.
That's just stunning. But you know what? People say it's all about the almighty dollar. That's not true. Movies that don't have sex and the constant cussing, they tend to make far more money than the movies that are filled with the filth. In fact, many of the top grossers, not all, but many of them have been family-friendly movies.
Absolutely.
And so, who knows? Their ultimate commitment is in rebelling against God.
That is. So, to your point, you know, you would think if the money was the bottom line, they would know not to put all this trash that they put into these
things. But they can't control themselves.
They can't because of their hate of God.
They hate God too much. But who knows? There's hope, right? Maybe they'll do a good job, and it's going to take over $100 million to do Noah's Ark and Noah's Flood.
Yeah.
This is really exciting. I pray that it's a good movie. And Answers in Genesis, they produced this magazine we're looking at called Answers, and they point out, hey, there's a lot of interest in Noah's Ark because what are they doing there in Kentucky?
Aren't they building a true-to-scale Ark in Kentucky?
They sure
near the,
are.
Near the Answers in Genesis Museum?
Yeah.
And that has taken in a lot more people than I think people expected.
Yeah, the Creation Museum has been wildly successful.
Absolutely.
So now, some distance down the road from that, they bought a ton of land, and they're building Noah's Ark full-scale, out of wood, with the animals.
That is going to be so cool. I was at a conference out there. They had markers of how big the ark would be outside of the building. Mm. It gave you a really good perspective of how huge this thing is. Now they're going to actually build it.
Yes.
And it's going to be really cool.
I can't wait. And there have been arks built around the world.
Yeah.
In Hong Kong and in Holland and elsewhere. And we're talking about 50% scale arks, full-size arks in Hong Kong. Full-size ark that actually sails.
Yeah, that's right.
Hybers in Holland.
Mm-hmm.
These are just amazing things
and very popular.
Yes. And so they have conducted 2 nationwide surveys here in the U.S., and they've estimated that more than 1 million people per year will travel just south of Cincinnati to visit Noah's Ark because they were on target. In fact, they did better than their projections for the Creation Museum.
That's right.
So I bet you they're right. And this will be a huge asset to the creation movement and to the preaching of the gospel.
Yeah, let's just hope that they stick to their word, that they'll respect the Bible, stay true to the biblical account.
I pray so. And we have in our store at Real Science Radio, we have the neatest resources on the global flood ever produced. And this is the book by Dr. Walt Brown, In the Beginning. This is not just a book. This is a beautiful, full-color, gorgeous, hard-covered book, great for homeschool students, great for adults who want to understand science better. And we have interviewed Dr. Walt Brown. Fred Williams and I have done shows about the hydroplate theory, And we have these radio shows collected on a series called The Hydroplate Theory and Dr. Walt Brown on the Air. You can get these, you can download it, or you can get them at our store, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store and you'll love In the Beginning, the book by Dr. Walt Brown, and our series, The Hydroplate Theory and Dr. Walt Brown on the Air. Check it out.
Yeah, I think it was the second or third creation book that I ever bought, and it is tremendous. It's beautiful. Great pictures. It gives really good summary arguments, and then it gives you details if you want to dig into it in the footnotes. I love the way that book is laid out.
Oh.
I couldn't recommend a better book for a creationist.
And
if you don't have it, you got to get it.
It starts out, part one is on the life sciences. Each section is like a page or less. It's in digestible bites. You can take it, enjoy it. Learn so much about science, the world God made, the judgment of the flood. And as you go on through the book, it's like you're being taught by an expert science teacher.
And he's meticulous and he keeps it up to date. What version is it on?
Well, version 8 is what we're selling at our store. This is the latest version. Now, Walt Brown, he's approaching 80 years old, and someday he's going to retire and maybe he'll produce a 9th version. But we have the latest version, the 8th edition of In the Beginning. Can't recommend it highly enough.
Oh, absolutely. It's tremendous. So, Bob, how many kinds of animals are on the ark? There's a great article in the Answers Magazine on this topic.
Wow. It really is. They call it Recounting the Animals on the Ark, No Kind Left Behind. like George Bush's No Child Left Behind.
That's right.
No Kid Left Behind. No Kind Left Behind. Fred, when I talk to atheists, even in the last weeks, I had one atheist, and he said with such confidence, there's no way you could answer this, you Christian creationist. How could Noah fit all those animals on the ark?
It's the most common straw man argument we ever get.
Yes, and it's been dealt with, and it's being dealt with by genetic scientists and scientists who are experts at taxonomy, biologists who are creationists. And so, Fred, at first take, a lot of unbelievers think the Bible says you have to put all the species that exist on the ark. How many species would that be?
Well, according to this article, it's about 1.3 million species.
There's a lot.
There's a lot of species.
And this is up to date. You know, there's the Encyclopedia of Life Project and all these online projects to list all the species that are known in the world. And there are somewhere around 1.3 million species.
Now, the interesting thing is that 1.1 million of these are insects, which wouldn't have been required to be on the ark, right?
Well, that's a good point. God said all the land creatures, so you don't have to bring fish on the ark, but he said all the land creatures that breathe through nostrils, and insects don't do that.
They don't have noses, do they?
No, they breathe through tubes in their exoskeletons, and that's different than nostrils.
That's right.
And so it makes sense that you would not need to put insects on the ark because they survive. You can't kill them.
And you can't get rid of them.
You have a flood and you end up with more insects, not fewer. And probably millions of bugs are going to end up in the ark anyway, just with the animals and with all the food for the animals. And there are going to be insects on top of the ark.
So there wasn't an Orkin man back then?
Right. And the floating log mats, where you have billions of trees floating in massive log mats. And
I mean, even if they had the Orkin man, they'd still end up there. I mean, that never works in my house.
You can't get rid of all those.
You can't get rid of all those guys.
No. So out of 1.3 million species, like you said, over a million are insects.
Yeah. And then another 230,000 are sea animals. They didn't need to be on the ark, right? Why would they need to be on the ark?
Right, because the earth is going to be covered with water. And even though many of them would die because of how violent the upheaval would be when the fountains of the great deep broke forth, even though that is true, many of them would survive because the earth is covered with water.
That's right.
And they live in water.
That's right. And there'd be a lot of ones, like you said, that would be killed and they'd be fossils, right?
In fact, the Permian extinction is called the mother of all extinctions, where a significant percentage of all the life in the sea was said to die off in one event. And interestingly, regarding Walt Brown's theory, Walt Brown explains the origin of Earth's radioactivity, and there was a dramatic change in the radioactivity of the seas based on these sediments of this extinction event, all at the same time when the radioactivity is changing. And we know that was a result of the global flood, and it is a global extinction event.
That's right. And boy, one of my favorite shows was The Origin of Earth's Radioactivity. Wasn't yes. that awesome? And Walt Brown has a great piece on that on his website, right? Hopefully it'll be in a future edition of his book.
Could
it's
be.
Tremendous.
But it's definitely in our Hydroplate Theory series that we offer.
Yeah, that's right.
So really great. When you look at the number of species, you get rid of all the insects, you get rid of all the sea animals, and there are still a lot of species.
Well, you're left with 33,000.
That's good counting. Fast. You're right. You're left with 33,000. And you think about that, and that seems like that'd be hard to put on the ark. But the Bible doesn't say every species, does it?
No, it doesn't. Do you need all the different kinds of jackrabbits on the ark? Because there's like 15 species in North America.
Of jackrabbits.
Yeah.
And so the question is, what are the created kinds? Because that's what God says went on the ark, not the species. And very often the species division is arbitrary, where experts argue and disagree with one another. You have the combiners and the splitters. They think, well, all these are one species, and others say they're different. Like, look at dogs, the tremendous diversity with dogs, and they're all one species. Mm-hmm. And if we found them in the fossil record, Great Danes and Chihuahuas, they'd say they were different species.
Yeah, they'd say the Chihuahua over time became a Great Dane in the fossil record,
yeah.
even though they're buried together.
But we know that they're the same species because, thankfully, they're alive
yeah.
and we could enjoy them.
Well, for Chihuahuas, I'm not sure I'd say thankfully there, but never mind.
So, Fred, there was a creationist who did a study, a feasibility study on Noah's Ark, and he did take a stab at how many animals would be on the ark.
Yeah, John Woodmerap, and what a tremendous book that was. Now, his estimate, he intentionally made it very conservative, so he knew he was
overestimating significantly.
Just to show how it really was feasible to fit all the animals on the ark. In fact, there was tons of room to fit all these animals on the ark. Using his numbers, he came up with about 7,800, right? About 7,800
yes.
kinds of animals.
And the way he came up with that is, you know what we had to memorize in grade school? Kingdom, phylum, class. You remember that, Fred?
Yeah.
The taxonomy, the organizing of life, living plants and animals in the world.
And the guy who came up with that list was a creationist, by the way.
Carl Linnaeus.
Yes.
He was a creationist. The interesting argument that many creationists have made is, if evolution were true, why don't we see every gradation between, let's say, apes and humans? Why aren't there still today 1,000 gradations? Because there's such a difference between apes and humans.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't there all the gradations? Giraffes with short necks, medium necks, long necks, and elephants with short trunks and no trunks and long trunks. And between all species, it should all be one merged blur, but it's not. You can classify them. That's true of the fossil record and of living organisms. So that's evidence right there that evolution is not true.
You've got distinct body plans.
So strong evidence against evolution and for the created kinds that the Bible says that they reproduce after their kinds.
What about camels and llamas? Do you need to have both of those on the ark?
Well, it depends, right?
Yeah, because they interbreed. If you breed the two, you come up with what? A semicolon? No, a comma.
A comma.
And that's true. They're actually called a comma.
Well, and like lions and tigers,
yeah.
you get ligers, right?
Or a tigon, depending on which one was the mother.
Which is male or female.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many animals like this. So there's a study, and what Woodmerap did was he said, let's take all the genus level.
And that's just above the species, right?
Yeah. It goes kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species. And he said, let's take the genus level. He added up for mammals, birds, reptiles. He left out the amphibians, but today creationists are including amphibians. And he did come up with about 7,800 different kinds of animals. Now, you needed two of each of those and seven pairs of the clean animals.
Mm-hmm.
So you need some tens of thousands of animals. And he described with the size of the ark, how easy it would be to fit those.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, it's well under half the ark. You could fit these animals there.
Mm-hmm.
The rest could be used for living quarters, for food storage. They had the waste if they didn't throw it off the ark. There's tons of room on the ark.
So today, not only did Woodmerap point out that it is easily done, but today, because Answers in Genesis is building a life-size Noah's Ark, they have brilliant scientists, like someone who was interviewed on the show, Dr. Georgia Purdom. Mm-hmm. She's a molecular biologist, a geneticist. She is involved with this project with other just great scientists, and they have been looking much more carefully, species by species, genus by genus, family by family, trying to determine through a very systematic approach called barominology, trying to determine really how many kinds of turtles would God have created in the beginning, elephants and so on. And they're coming out with numbers that they're publishing. And so why don't we look at the numbers that right now today they're saying would have likely been on the ark.
Okay. So mammals, 239.
239 kinds of mammals.
Yes.
So that is from the 3,700 genera at the genus level.
That Woodenrap had predicted and overestimated on purpose.
Yeah, he said he was overestimating. So now here's a much more reasonable number, 239. Wolves are part of the dog species, or we should say dogs are wolves.
That's right.
And so when you have miniature dogs, it's a form of dwarfism. When you have dogs that have only white fur, it's a form of albinism. They've lost the ability to produce melanin and so on. Usually this is a loss of information.
It is. And I think geneticists generally point to like the wolf as having a little bit less of a genetic load. In other words, it's more healthy.
Right.
You know, Ken Ham likes to make fun of poodles, but it's actually true scientifically. If you talk to a veterinarian, they're actually very unhealthy animals. They have a lot of mutations, a lot of diseases.
And a wolf will live much longer than most
dog
breeds.
Yep.
Yeah. And so there are way fewer mammal-created kinds than you might think at first blush. And it turns out that these scientists working on this, this is a current study, ongoing, over the last couple of years, and they want to be done by the time they build Noah's Ark for their exhibits there. So when they say 239, they're focusing at the family level, not the kingdom, which used to be animal and plant. Well, today they have a level above kingdom, right?
Yeah, they added the domain and then life.
Right. So they start with life and then they say the domain. And that's whether single-celled creatures, whether they have a nucleus or not. Like a eukaryote and prokaryote. And if it's a bacteria. And they have this new domain they added a while back recently, archaea. And it's a single-celled creature with no nucleus and no organelles, like no structures within,
within the cell.
The cell. Like we have in eukaryotes. Okay, so Fred, they're focusing at the family level.
Yeah, the family level would be like canines, right? The different kinds of coyotes, wolves, dogs. That's the family level.
So when you do that with mammals, you get about 240. You do it with birds,
you get about 300.
300 families of birds. Now, the biggest is reptiles.
Yeah, not much more. 321.
321 families of reptiles. And again, they're not only counting families. They're looking at a case-by-case basis of can these interbreed? What is the evidence from their anatomy and their ecosystem that they lived in and their habits and all? Then amphibians, they're adding 70 families and only 70 families, like frogs and salamanders and so on. 70 families of amphibians, and they come out with a very interesting number.
Yeah, they all add up to 938 kinds of animals that you would need to bring on the ark. 938.
And the
ark. So that's almost 10 times less than Woodenrap had estimated.
Yes. And the ark was big, right?
It was huge. In fact, the dimensions given in the ark are perfect for stability, right? Whenever the Bible touches on things that are scientific, it's always accurate. South Korean architects tried to model the ark using the dimensions, and they could not capsize the boat. It's built perfectly for stability.
And when you say South Korean architects, you're talking about some of the world's leading shipbuilding engineers. These are maritime engineers, architects who know what they're doing. And they said, look, the ark's dimensions are virtually perfect.
So, Bob, we know what dinosaurs are on the ark, right?
Dinosaurs were on the ark.
Yeah, what about the Apatosaurus or those really big dinosaurs? What's up with that?
Well,
wouldn't that take up a lot of room?
It would have, and maybe the ark would have been lopsided. God brought the animals to Noah, but God would have brought juveniles.
Juveniles, yeah. Because we know that reptiles in general, they keep growing, right, as they get older.
Yeah.
And these huge dinosaurs are just really old dinosaurs. And we know things lived longer before the flood.
Yeah.
And so why bring the senior citizens? No offense, Bob.
No offense taken. at realscienceradio.com. We have the greatest science materials, and we have DVDs on fossils. And these are two of the best science DVDs I've ever seen by Dr. Carl Werner, friend of Real Science Radio. They're called Living Fossils and Evolution, the Grand Experiment. These are a doctor's look at the fossil record, and the evidence against evolution and for creation is stunning. Top quality photography, videos, amazing interviews with evolutionists. You'll love it if you get these. Plus, you'll support continued broadcast of Real Science Radio. So go to our website, realscienceradio.com, click on the store, and check out Living Fossils and Evolution, the Grand Experiment.
You know, Bob, the store really is filled with these great materials. Highly encourage you looking at these.
Yeah, and people will help our telethon. The goal is $25,000 this month. It's not a lot of time. And get these. You'll love them. You could give them as gifts. Let your kids watch them, and you'll help us continue to grow.
And I have ESP, Bob, that people are going to actually buy these things. I've got extra sensory perception.
What?
Well, there's an article in here about six senses for different animals.
Oh,
pretty interesting.
So not the sixth sense. Like, remember back in the 60s, Edgar Cayce and all these people that were famous claiming they had ESP?
Yeah, like Jean Dixon that predicted that Kennedy would die in office.
She did predict that, right?
Well, yeah, she predicted it, but she also said that it could be over two terms and that it may either be assassinated or die in office. And if you do the math, she had a 3 in 7 chance of being right.
A 3 in 7? You mean because of the presidents who died or were
assassinated? Yeah, and because she gave it 8 years, and of course he died in the first term, not the second. And of course she made predictions like World War III would start in 1954. She predicted Jackie Onassis wouldn't marry Aristotle Onassis, and she did the next day. Oops.
Hence Jackie Onassis.
Yeah.
And so it turns out that ESP stuff we heard a lot about in the 60s was all bogus.
She was a con woman.
It was
absolutely
bunk. But Answers Magazine talks about the sixth senses, plural, that God has given humans and many different creatures. And Fred, we don't really have time to get into them. But just to give the audience to whet their appetite, there are senses in living organisms that are astounding.
Yeah, like when a fish moves and it lets off an electric current and that sharks can detect it.
Electric sensors and magnetic sensors and radar, basically.
Yeah, motion detection.
So we'll talk about all of those on our next Real Science Radio program. Fred Williams, thank you so very much. What a fun time to do this show with you in studio. We've been doing it for years now, and what a blessing it is. Thank you,
Thanks,
Fred.
Bob.
You're very welcome. And the last DVD I want to tell you about is Programming of Life. Our goal is $25,000 this month for our telethon at realscienceradio.com. You click on the store, and you will love a DVD by Dr. Don Johnson called Programming of Life. We have dubbed this the best molecular biology DVD ever made. You're going to love it. Check it out at the store, realscienceradio.com. God bless you guys.
Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.
You can support the ministry of Bob Enyart Live by subscribing to Bob's monthly Bible studies, monthly videos, monthly sermons, or monthly classic TV shows at kgovstore.com. You can also support the show and make a monthly or one-time donation by calling 1-800-8-ENYART or at kgovstore.com. That's kgovstore.com.